Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar, just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Warning, Klingon, tractor beam engaged. Captain Lorca was captured.
We will find him.
Where are we?
A Klingon prison vessel.
Prepare to jump.
I don't know how much more the creature can sustain.
I gave you an order.
You seek glory.
But glory must be earned through sacrifice.
Stick with me. I'm a survivor, just like you.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
Hello there, I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan, joined by Ian McNally and Bahe Yusuf for another episode of Binge Watch. We're taking on Star Trek Discovery this time. It's all the way up to episode 5. It's called Choose Your Pain. Wow. Wait, before we start things off, can I just say, it's so beautiful. No, like literally every episode, because I've been watching a lot of old Trek as well. And, you know, even Enterprise. And there is always a very stagnant or stale color palette that exists throughout because they don't deviate from that color palette at all. And yet with every scene, like...
The opening to this episode, you get a weird dream sequence thing floating through the bridge, which you would never really see.
No. And also, whether it's in 10 Forward, I mean, we're just calling the little canteen 10 Forward, but whether it's in 10 Forward, whether it's on the Klingon ship, whether it's on the Discovery, or even, you know, at that space station, the color palette's different. Everything looks so beautiful. They spent so much time on the art design and lighting and color. So much attention. I'm really loving this.
Yeah, and same as the replicator shot last week. There was a shot of going from outside a shuttle to Lorca sitting inside the shuttle. It's something that no Trek would ever do before because it's too awkward to do that with a model.
You're all right.
The other shows were motion-controlled models. Like, Next Generation was the last one that probably tried to do much with the shuttles. The shuttles on Enterprise were kind of lame-looking. That those weird, bubbly window thingies. But this just shot of just coming from... I think it was a star in the background that pulls in. You see Lorca sitting inside in the shuttle, which those shuttles still look menacing. And just there was, like, oranges and things.
Yeah.
And, like, the darkness inside because of his eyes. Contrast.
And everything's so well polished as well, right? Like
literally the bridge is actually polished.
Not only that, but their badges are just shiny. You know, it's like do they just have to sit there and just like polish because they're gonna get in trouble?
Every Starfleet officer only works 5 hours a day because 3 hours are spent polishing everything.
That's true, probably it, yeah.
So let's get into episode 5. Now
Spoilers from the off,
but I usually so every series of Star Trek has 1, 2, 3 maybe Captain is kidnapped episodes.
Yeah.
Right?
Really?
And with the exception of maybe the 2 episodes in Next Generation where Picard is kidnapped by the Borg and then once again by the Cardassians.
There are four lights.
Most of these Captain kidnapped episodes are kind of lame. Every time it happened to Sisko, I would just roll my eyes. And you know why they do it? I mean, they do it because Star Trek is such an ensemble piece. And ever so often, they like hey, let's show off the acting chops of our lead, shall we?
Literally torture porn.
But this was different.
Yeah. The key, again, is the Discovery is doing... The stories they're doing are the stories that they would do in the old show. They're just doing 3 an episode.
Yes.
Captain Lorca getting kidnapped, Saru learning how to command, and the tardigrade. Not Burnham, but just what's going on with the tardigrade. Those would be 3 separate Next Generation episodes.
Oh, right. Okay, got it.
Or they would be 3 separate Enterprise episodes. They would be 3 awful Enterprise episodes.
Mm.
But in this, they're bundled together. Mm-hmm. They're not rushed mostly. And it works really well because you're constantly... The paciness hasn't dropped off after the first couple of episodes.
Yeah.
You're kept invested. And even though Burnham, like, the most she does in this is sit in her bed and brood a bit, it's nice to see a little bit more of the other cast.
Yeah, so this was the first episode that wasn't focused entirely on Burnham and actually focused on the other players.
Yeah. Yeah.
On Lorca, on Stamets, on the Doctor, on Saru,
yeah.
who tried to science his way into becoming a better captain. I love it.
Yeah. And then you realize, like, nah, this is garbage. Don't do it this way.
Yeah, which is great. Which is great. So, before we get into the plot, Ian, I called him Bahir because I had a conspiracy theory, which I kind of worked out in the middle of the night yesterday.
Uh-huh.
All right, so here's the thing.
Oh, wait for it. Yeah.
Okay.
I just saw Uma's notepad has like something crudely pasted into it. Wait, I'm expecting him to break out the string.
Yeah. It's like photos and string theory, right? Okay. Shahzad Latif plays Ash Tyler.
Right.
In the show. He is the guy who's captured along with Captain Lorca.
From the USS Jaeger, right? From the Battle of the Binaries.
Correct. They've given it a name. I think he is the traitor because I think he is Vok.
Oh.
So.
Wait for it.
I did some IMDBing. So Shahzad Latif plays Ash Tyler.
Yes.
Vok is played by Javed Iqbal.
Right.
If you look at Shahzad Latif's Wikipedia page, his name is Shahzad Khalik Iqbal. Coincidence? I don't know. Wait. I was looking for articles, casting articles back in the day, and in 2016, they said Shahzad Latif was cast as Cole, which is now played by Kenneth Mitchell.
Yeah.
And they said he is cast as Takuvma's apprentice.
Oh.
But then they changed it and then they just said, oh, no, he's being cast as Ash Tyler.
Well, maybe at one point he was supposed to play Ripper.
Maybe. But in the 3 weeks,
yeah.
maybe Laurel, what she said to Vok last episode, you must sacrifice everything.
Yeah. I mean, did you get it was 3 weeks later? Where did you get the 3 weeks from?
Oh, no, she says it.
Does she?
You've been a very busy man, Captain. In 3 weeks, you've done this and this.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Right? I watched the first 3 minutes of After Trek again before I realized that I can't spend another hour watching Star Trek.
Right.
And they mentioned it was Laurel. I didn't realize that was Laurel.
Oh, yes, the actress playing Laurel.
Yeah, there wasn't enough. No one called her Laurel.
And also going back to classic Trek, Trouble with Tribbles, there was a Klingon spy who was like made to look like a human.
Yeah.
And of course in DS9, there was Dukat, who was made to look like a Bajoran in the last season. So it's not something new or unique, but I'm thinking,
and Kirk went the other way as well. Kirk went to be a Romulan at one point, right?
Oh, that's right, yes. Oh, is it possible?
It makes sense because all he has to give up is everything, and everything to him is his Klingon albino heritage.
And he also said, you know, Laurel has taken a liking to me.
Yeah.
And also,
did you just blow my mind?
That being said, Harry Mudd didn't deny being the spy, and I think maybe Harry Mudd was still the spy.
Well, again,
when
you say spy and traitor, I mean, were you getting that? Harry Mudd had a chip on Stewart,
correct?
And he was remarkably unbruised,
correct? So I don't think Mudd was not the guy giving Laurel information. Right. I just think they captured Lorca as a ruse to get him close to Ash Tyler and then get Ash Tyler onto the Discovery,
onto the secret weapon.
Could it be? I don't know.
Yeah, it would be an interesting way to go. And with this show, you never know.
Oh, also, if you look at the IMDb page for Javed Iqbal, there are no photos of the actor except him as Vok.
Yeah, so this was me several hours ago, right? Like, yeah. I'm just having to listen to all this like conspiracy theory thing.
It makes sense, though. Cause
no, it completely makes sense.
Because he's totally... I put it down to... There's a couple of things we'll get to later that have minor annoyances about this episode, and they're weird things that seem to be recurring, and it feels a little bit like... I don't know whether some of them are production problems and some of them are story problems or some of them are intentional. One of which was Ash Tyler's complete inconsistency of weakness.
Right.
Like, he was strong enough to take on some Klingons, and he got a bit of a bounce off a wall, and then it's go on without me, but then immediately after that, he's fighting Laurel.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they got him transported back to the Discovery, he kind of collapsed a bit. Did you notice there was, like... transporter dust falling off.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
There's no reason for that to be there, but it's like, screw it, that's cool. Yeah. Somebody, you know, it takes about, I talked before, it takes something like 4 months post-production on these episodes.
That's
and
right.
Someone was like, well, I've done my bit early. I'm just going to add some extra transporter fluff.
I've got some time before I need to do the next one.
I'm an overachiever.
Yeah, but it's like, leave me behind, go on without me, and then he gets up and fights somebody, and then he's carried off again, and then he's fine on the Marauder small ship, and then he's a bit weak when he gets to the ship again. It all feels a little off.
Unless it's all part of the plan.
Exactly. Because I was thinking, like, you're on the... you know, as I was like, I'm glad to be with you, Captain. And he's like, you've gone from a Klingon prison to the most wanted ship in the Federation. He's like, nowhere else I'd rather be. Dun, dun, dun. Dun,
dun, dun. Okay, I have a question, right? And you guys have got the experience on this. So when they were in that Marauder Klingon ship,
small one
when they were flying, right? And then they get transported out. Shouldn't they be transported sitting down? Shouldn't they land in the spaceship like in that motion as opposed to? I'm just curious because that just like
if you know Michael Okuda is the guy who designed the Okudagrams, which is all the LCARS system on the Next Generation, all the way the screens looked.
Okay, yeah. Okay, cool.
And he did an article. There's an article. I'm not sure where the article is, but if you look at his Twitter timeline, he talks about it, and it's somebody talking about the transporters. And are they instant death? The idea that
if it did just
because originally the idea in the 60s when they talked about it, they didn't know much about quantum entanglement, all this kind of stuff. And later Trek tried to tie all their science into real.
Like science. Realness.
Yeah.
And the idea was it was more like a fax machine where I took a copy here, destroyed that copy, and then recreated sort of over here. So like stepping into it is essentially suicide.
So it's like the Prestige type thing, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah,
spoilers for the Prestige.
by the way. I remember reading about that in a book.
So there's been a whole thing going on about it, and like they go through it in quite detail in this article, and some of it is like regarding, well, you know, Barclay was able to see things in the matter stream. Like the idea that in the matter stream, you're not just atoms. You might be some part of your conscience is transferred differently.
Okay.
So there is this kind of concept that you can be changed slightly while you're in the transporter.
Okay. Which leads to transporter accidents and mirror universes and all kinds of things.
Yeah. But also comes with the handiness of that you don't always get transported 3 feet off the ground and fall on your ass every time.
I was just curious. I just thought I'd ask.
Also, go back to the Xena answer when she appeared on The Simpsons. Every time there's something you don't understand, a wizard did it.
The Wizard Merklin.
Yeah.
So this episode also is called Choose Your Pain, which...
I feel your pain.
Exactly.
It runs deep.
I don't want my pain taken away. I need my pain.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that's what it is. I'm assuming the writers are just having a lot of fun with this, with Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. And obviously Lorca is like that. He needs his pain. That's why he doesn't want to get his eyes fixed. And like the Admiral says, why don't you just get those damn eyes fixed?
Yeah,
because I hate doctors.
Because I hate doctors, but also because I need my pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone in this episode has pain. Saru has pain. Yeah. Ripper has pain. Burnham has pain.
And Stamets has pain. Stamets literally has in the pain. Side, they really need to redesign that interface.
That thing going in, it's not.
Can you turn it into some kind of hat or something?
Yeah.
A little less stabby?
Not feasible, that one. Yeah, really not feasible.
Also, when it comes to what happened at the end with Mudd, I mean, what Lorca did.
Well, I think it was just jump in. Like, there's a weird thing that we've talked for this long already, and Harcourt, Fenton, Mudd is not the main thing. And I think that, again, comes down to the way they're doing this three-way splits.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, Rainn Wilson's great.
He's phenomenal. Right? Have you seen the original series with Mudd?
I don't know
you have
anything.
No idea. He's this kind of...
I've read up about him because you guys mentioned him, I think, a couple of episodes ago or maybe even just off chats. Mm. I read up about him. I know him as a character. I know there was that story where he first appeared with the robots and Kirk.
Yes.
That's the second episode.
Mudd. Yeah.
Yeah. I read that. I've read sort of like the description of it. But I don't know if this is just the Mudd character, but Rainn Wilson really feels like he's hamming it. But is that just a Mudd thing?
A bit, because the original character was kind of theatrical and pantomimish.
Okay,
and the idea was that Starfleet seems kind of stuffy. They wanted to have a counterpoint to that in the original show. So they put in this character who was like, he's not, this is before Han Solo.
Mm.
So he's not roguish, he's just a bandit.
Right, got it. Okay.
Fat bandit. Right?
Sexist, misogynistic bandit.
And will do anything to get himself out of trouble. Although, even if it means dooming the human race to enslavement by
robots.
Although
I will say, him buying a moon for Stella... spot on.
Yes.
Well.
Stella ties in. I forgot about Stella tying into his later appearances.
Yeah, because that's what's so heartbreaking later on, like with what happened with him and Stella.
Okay.
So that's why every line he says
in this episode.
Like a scream, Stella? No, he doesn't. No? But with every line he said about Stella had so much meaning to it.
Yeah.
And the writers are clearly playing around with all of this.
Right.
I mean, he is incredibly misogynistic because he has an android of Stella in the original series with an off switch so he can always get the last word.
When she starts nagging him, he can turn but I love that he gets to say the line is like, you know, you started the war because you were boldly going where no man has gone before.
And
that's like, that's
say,
cool.
Yeah.
Like,
I was going to say that because I had it down in my notes how that for that line to be used as a negative as opposed to the positive. Yeah.
It's very good. Also, his line of just going, also, ouch.
Yes. Like you said ouch first time, then he introduced himself, then he reiterated the ouch just in case Lorca didn't quite get it.
Yeah.
What's great about Mudd in this episode as well, it really provides that counter, because in the original series, yes, he was the roguish element to the stuffy Starfleet. And in this episode, it's like, hey, 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 we're trying to make a living out there in your perfect universe. Yeah. And then you go and screw it up and we've got nothing. And now we're stuck in this war as well, which is a nice counterpoint.
It was. And leaving him behind the cell, just the way he's like gripping on the bars, he's like, I'll get you next time, Gadget. You know, he's like, I think he's in at least three. I think he's in three episodes, or he's going to be in more episodes, I believe.
He's gotta be.
So I'm looking forward to see what happens to him and Stewart.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't come up so soon, though. I hope it's not one of those things where, like, in the next episode, he's suddenly there. You know what I mean?
No, I think it's going to take some time.
It's going to take some time before he comes back, right?
At least the way they're rolling all this out.
Yeah, because I didn't put one and two together to get 3 weeks gap, but like they are jumping around a lot, and they're bypassing the thing I said from last episode, which was that with the Discovery popping in and out all the time, that people wouldn't know about it. But I like the fact that they're like, oh no, we're just going to close that down. Starfleet knows about it, and they're on the hunt for tardigrades, which makes Starfleet kind of bloodthirsty, and it adds this air of desperation to the whole thing.
Yeah, it does, because I think nobody knows who's winning. They're all having these little victories. Klingons are, Starfleet is, and everyone's trying to find the edge, right? Whether the Klingons are planting a spy in Starfleet, or whether Starfleet's trying to find more tardigrades.
Or right now, the Klingons are already fast building a whole load of cloakable starships.
Oh yeah, that too. We forgot about the cloaking devices. Yeah. And yeah, so I think that desperation really plays well with Lorca, because Lorca seems like a captain we've never seen before. Mm. In leaving Mud behind, like Kirk, Picard, Sisko, all of these other captains, Janeway, even if someone tries to kill them, they will always save them in the end, because they're better than that. But Lorca's like, no, man.
Screw you.
You screwed us. I'm leaving you with the Klingons. I'm out of here. Yeah. And I know there are some people who are really upset about that, saying, oh, it lost the spirit of Trek and blah, blah, blah. But Lorca's not your average captain.
Yeah, and desperate times call for desperate measures.
He's like, my ship, my way.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, the big question I have is, it's still there about, Lorca talks about, like, he's given orders, he's given free rein. But what were his orders? Because like it's the limits of that are very interesting to me. Because like the spore drive is not something that's immediate. Like, I mean, Burnham thought it was like a bioweapon.
Yeah.
First off. So it's not that, but it does enable them to do things that they would not be able to do normally. But what are the limits of that, and what is his like greater bounds of those orders? You know what I mean? Like, he's like, is it to win at any cost?
Mm.
Or is it to develop a weapon that will help us to strike, fast strike these things? Or is it literally chase up every crazy new technology you can and basically become like Area 51 or Skunk Works and just try everything? So I'm wondering if it's going to be focused just on the spore drive, or it's going to go other places with this stuff.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. And the great thing with Discovery is it could do all of these
things. It could. Yeah. It's weird, right? Sometimes when I'm watching it, because I watch it on my TV with my Apple TV, and sometimes I just touch the remote to see how many minutes left, and I'm like, no, only 17.
Yeah, I pause in the middle to take notes and just look at the clock. It's like, that was a good 20 minutes. It's going to be another good 22 minutes left.
Yeah. What else has happened in this episode? So much. We haven't even spoken about the tardigrade.
Yeah.
So a natural, I guess, conclusion to the tardigrade arc, if you will.
Is that a very Star Trek thing to do? Is that how they would treat like
a... I think, so this is where this is where some of the inconsistencies come up for me, because I think a Star Trek thing wouldn't have been to get in this situation in the first place. Like Stamets says, I didn't want a living organism as part of my spore drive.
Mm.
I just didn't think about putting sat-nav in there. So Picard's option would be, we're not using it.
Right, yeah.
And maybe Kirk could be like, we'll use it once to punch a Klingon in the nose, but that's about it.
Right.
And then that then has knock-on effects, because like Stamets saying, like him talking to Saru and saying, you know, it would have been in any chain of command. It was like, by the way, if it was the warp core, like, by the way, the warp core's got like one, maybe two jumps left in it, but I can't guarantee that second jump.
Yeah.
Then they would say, right, we're going to hold off till we figure this out.
Yeah.
Whereas damming the torpedoes and all that kind of stuff, and maybe Saru's inexperience could play that way.
Yes.
That usually wouldn't happen in Star Trek, because he wouldn't get to that chain of command. And again, maybe that works on this ship of misfits.
But it's a time of war. Their captain has been kidnapped. He is like the sole guy who can manage this ship of misfits.
Not only that, but he's very clearly stated early on in the episode where he feels he's inexperienced to be in this position, right?
Mm. Saru.
Saru, yes.
And also early in the episode, Lorca states very clearly, I am the only person you have that can do any of this stuff to the admirals, right? Yeah.
And I want to find out why, because he's only a captain. Why is he not? Like, why isn't there an admiral in the chair? Because they do that in other shows as well, where some threat comes up, an admiral will come in and they'll all bristle under their command. Because again, in most times the admirals are evil.
So I think the reason for that is because in this pristine Starfleet, Lorca's the only one who's blown up his crew because he didn't want them to fall to the Klingons. Yeah. I think
he's the only one willing to go.
Yeah, I think they know that, oh, okay, so maybe he's like the Section 31 dude that we need because no one else, everyone else has morals and a conscience.
Yeah, there's a little sign on the 26th century Section 31 plaque and I had just rubbed off the bottom, founder, Captain Lorca.
Exactly.
But
right?
Again, it does play in, I guess, a little bit to the themes of, like, has Starfleet gone soft?
Yes.
I mean, these themes are running through and they just juggle them beautifully of, like, Stamets was talking a few episodes about, we're not a military group. We're not supposed to be a military group. But the thing is, what do you do when you're a utopia that's threatened? You have to have some sort of response. You can't just roll over because, especially when it's Klingons who just, they won't ever stop.
They just want to fight, yeah.
And the way all of this stuff plays out is so good as well. Even that scene when they're in the shuttle and the computer just goes, unknown warp signature detected.
Yeah.
And Lorca just springs into action.
Grabs a gun.
The speed at which that happens, I'm like, you are so cool.
Okay. That's
definitely not a pizza.
Did you order it? Yeah. You brought up Captain Laurel earlier.
Yes.
Is it just me or does her English accent sound a little Scottish?
Scottish, yes. I was saying the same thing.
Okay, it wasn't just me.
Yeah, it's like what you said, like you have an unbeatable ship or something like that.
Yeah, appearing out of nowhere.
Undetectable.
Undetectable, yeah. I wrote this down. I'm just like, this is so weird.
Maybe she tortured a lot of Scottish captains or something like that. That's what she figured out.
That's where she picked it up, I guess.
We've got a mutual friend on Twitter and Facebook, Hazri, who's in the UK right now, and he put up a screen grab from Star Trek Discovery and he just goes, the plight of every international student, your English is perfect.
Yes. I did like that. I also like that as a distraction technique. She was just about to hit him or do something with him and then she subjected him to the Ludovico technique. He seemed pretty fine after that. I'm wondering again, because Discovery, anything can happen, is that going to have some kind of negative impact later, because they very clearly showed his medicine falling. It's like he couldn't fix himself up for a while.
Yeah.
Who knows how long he's on the ship for?
Yeah.
Is he going to have to eventually get his damn eyes fixed?
Also, that was pretty, like, made me squirm in my seat.
It did make me squirm.
That, the little things flicking in?
Anything with eyes. Yeah, I can't.
Because he puts the kind of the holder on. It's like, okay, it's not going to touch his eyeballs. And then these little things go, bing!
It's the one before that, when he does it to himself.
Oh, when he pokes
close up of that pin going in. I was like, nope, I'm okay.
When he's putting in his space eye drops.
Space eye drops.
Which is the worst scene in Clockwork Orange as well.
Yeah.
They've just got the eyes pinned open. You're like,
and you know that that wasn't CG.
Yeah, and even the bit where he's just doing it in the dark and the Admiral comes in, he's like, turn out the lights!
Turn out the lights!
You're like, oh God, that's scary in the Klingons. It's like, you just imagine, you're like, oh, my eyes are burning.
And then they finally dropped the F-bomb on Star Trek.
Twice. That,
yeah.
In a row. Which was great.
So, okay, initially, I was completely taken aback.
Well, I mean, they've dropped a few other curse words in other episodes, usually...
like shit.
Yeah, you can do that on this book.
Damn.
That, right?
Yeah.
Usually the Data version.
That's
as
right.
In the Enterprise is crashing, oh shit.
Oh, right, got it.
They got away with that before, but I don't think they've ever done an F-bomb.
No, never.
Unless first they time. Have it come out of the jittery, innocent mouth of Cadet Sylvia.
Which was perfect.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And
Stamets' response
was also perfect.
It was amazing. It was like, okay, This is sacrilege. This has never happened. Okay, I'm on board.
I can do this.
Yeah. This is fucking cool.
Exactly. And I had to check myself mentally. I was like, Uma, don't be a prude. Because I was like, you can't say that on Star Trek.
In the future, they have come up with all sorts of other cuss words that we don't even hear because they don't say them because they're so bad.
And also because the Universal Translators maybe blocked them.
I like
how when they dropped the F-bomb, it wasn't like an angry thing. It was like
a funny, jokey.
But not that bad. But she was super excited because it was so fucking cool, right? And then Stamets go, yeah. You know, and he confirms it. So I like that it wasn't F Klingons are here kind of thing. You know what I mean? I like that.
So what did we think? I mean, there's a few very clear foreshadowings in this episode for later in this episode. One of which is like, oh, hey, we've got like tardigrade pilot juice now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Did you think it was going to be Stamets or did you think it was going to be Burnham?
I thought it was going to be Burnham. I thought she would do the thing again.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was going to be Burnham.
And I'm so glad it was Stamets though.
Yeah. And I like, it's a nice development for his character. He did want to speak to his mushrooms.
He did.
Episodes, yeah. And I did like that. It was very Star Trek 2-ish when Saru says, have you revived the tardigrade? He says, well, we're ready to... He didn't even hesitate. He says, we're ready to jump.
Ready to jump, yes. Yeah.
He doesn't answer the question. I thought that was great because then you can't get court-martialed for it.
Yeah. Correct. That's one. Also, given that he likes to talk to mushrooms, the Portobello joke was kind of cute.
And Burnham chewing her face off because it's like... I thought she was going to say, just, you know, swallowing the urge to punch you in the face.
But it's also nice to see how Stamets is
developing,
warming up and developing as well. Because, you know, even though he was an a-hole in the first few episodes, you see that his primary love is still science.
Yeah.
And so, and mushrooms. And which means he's
and
not the kind of person. Which means he's not the kind of person that will, you know, torture a tardigrade.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because he realizes the value of human life and human sentience, or just life and sentience in general, right?
Of all the souls I've ever met, his was the most human.
His was the most human.
That scene of the tardigrade shrinking, I was like, what on earth is happening? But that's the science thing that actual tardigrades do.
Yeah.
They go into deep hibernation stuff. It's very cool.
Very cool.
There's so much about this episode that's really cool. We'll fill you in now, Bahir, on some of the, I guess, classic callbacks. So
okay, go for it.
When Saru goes, list all the captains.
Yes.
Yep. Right. I had those names down. I was going to ask you guys.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. So you see Robert April.
Okay, I didn't put that name down. I felt like I recognized Archer, Decker, and Pike.
Right.
Yeah.
And rightly so. So
okay, cool.
Robert April was the first captain of the USS Enterprise.
Retired after his first 5-year mission.
That's right. He actually appeared in the animated series.
Oh, okay.
That's right. And he was voiced by Scotty.
Oh, right.
That's right.
And also in some of the Star Trek encyclopedias and other stuff, I think his name was in the original script, I think. It was Robert April. That's where it originally came from.
It wasn't supposed to be Kirk. It was supposed to be Robert April.
And Robert April was the pen name of Gene Roddenberry, or as a character in some of his Lieutenant series.
Yes.
And if you look in some of the Star Trek encyclopedias or something like that, the picture that they have always accompanying Robert April is Gene Roddenberry Starfleet.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. Yeah. That's nice.
Jonathan Archer, of course, you know, captain of the NX-01 Enterprise.
Owner of the Beagle.
Matthew Decker was commander of the USS Constellation, and he appeared in the original series episode called The Doomsday Machine.
Okay.
And then, of course, Philippa Georgiou, you know.
Yep, yep.
And Christopher Pike, who was the captain of the Enterprise that Kirk replaced.
He was in the original pilot, The Cage, and then turned up as he was disabled in a battle, and they used sections of that pilot that never aired as, like, flashbacks.
For an episode called The Menagerie, Part 1 and Part 2.
So, okay.
And also he's played by Bruce Greenwood in the J.J. Abrams movies.
I was just going to say. Right. Okay. Yeah, because I was just like, when I was reading these names, I was wondering why I knew them.
Yeah.
But, okay, cool.
Why did you think you knew Decker?
I don't know.
Because I read it and I first of all thought, like, that doesn't make sense, because I was thinking of Decker from the motion picture. And if you look at, so for... You know, to pierce behind the curtain, like, you know, I know some of this stuff, but I double check some of it at Memory Alpha, which is the main Star Trek Wiki page, which is updated almost immediately with Star Trek Discovery stuff. It's insane, but it's kind of an in joke kind of thing that Matt Decker is the father of Will Decker, who was the character in
the motion picture.
The motion picture. I think it's in some publicity materials. I never knew that, but the name itself was enough to go like.
Yeah.
So I thought it was smart and it wasn't, so I checked the internet and then I found out it was stupid, which happens a lot.
Which is cool. Tilly mentions the Daystrom Institute.
I don't know that one.
So Richard Daystrom was the guy who invented the duotronic computer in the Star Trek universe that enabled all of this exploration and warp and all this stuff, right? Yeah, so that's cool. He's been mentioned in the series. Like in all the series, they mentioned Daystrom, right, at some point. And then the other cool thing is when you look at the map, under possible locations for Lorca.
When they're looking at the Mempa system?
Yes. One of it is Rurapenta.
Ah, Rurapente.
Which is where Kirk and Spock were sent to in Star Trek VI.
The prison planet.
Oh.
And Jonathan Archer was also sent there as well in one of the episodes of Enterprise.
I didn't get that, man.
Yeah. You're like, whatever, Enterprise. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So
and, also, it was a D7 Klingon battlecruiser, which was used a lot in the original series
that
as well.
Is correct.
And they're not showing... I don't know where they're not really showing. You don't see the Klingon ships as clearly as you like. You don't see them very well.
No, you don't. I don't know why.
In this, even just the ship just appears. You just
like
see the
shadows and green
and
stuff.
Because I wonder what they did. Because I mean, the designs of those original ships are pretty cool. And the D7 was the one with the engines behind it, the kind of big one with the long neck.
Okay. Yeah.
And then later on, there was the Birds of Prey and stuff like that. So that I want to see those ships. I want to see them cool ships.
So the birds of prey thing, is that like a, is that just like a slang that the Enterprise guys come up with, or rather the Starfleet guys?
No, they're a kind of ship.
They're kind of. I mean, there are birds of. I mean, it's a Klingon. It's a translation from the original Klingon, obviously.
Right. Got it. Okay. Because they refer to it in here as well.
Yeah, because their ships are all based around like predators. Like you've got the. They were marauders, I think. Were the.
Yep.
Lorel said she stole a marauder last episode. I'm not sure. Were the small ships marauders in this or something else?
I'm assuming the shuttles are marauders. I don't know.
But somebody they mentioned. A predatory name. There was birds of prey, then warbirds.
Right, go
all like they're all these kind of like cool sounding names. Whereas the Enterprise is like Constitution Clash. You're like, what?
The Enterprise name.
But I would like to see more of those Klingon ships because you know the disco drive on the Discovery is great every week. But I'd like to see a little bit more of the tech of the universe. Yeah.
Disco drive.
Yeah, when it spins up, it looks like it's disco ball.
My favorite line. Also is when Burnham is talking to Saru and she says, you should have the privilege to see the universe the way she did.
Mm.
Which was a really nice line, I thought. And their relationship's developing really nicely because they're like fighting siblings. They love each other, but then they kind of hate each other.
Only one of the siblings is terrified the other one's going to get them killed. Because when she walks on the bridge at the beginning, his threat ganglia literally go, what?
Yeah. You're a predator.
Yeah, it's like having a heart attack every time someone walks in the room and not in a good way.
Yeah.
It's not you're like, not oh, even my knowing why. Yeah.
But I will say, though, I think at the end, I like that at the end he decides to not listen to that analysis of the computer.
Because I would just mess him up, and that's not how captains do it.
And it's not only that, but I think it feels like he's learning from that idea of what Michael was saying about how you need to, you kind of just need to, I don't know how to say
trust yourself.
Yeah, that instinct, because he kept analyzing things, right?
What
he
did they say, right? They said what? Bravery, self-sacrifice. Yeah. I can't remember all of the things they
listed. Tactical intelligence, I think, was one of them.
Yeah.
Compassion was one
Compassion.
Of them.
Compassion. Yeah.
So I just feel like Saru was always over-analyzing it. And I think at the end where he says, no, you know what, cancel, it was almost as if he's saying, okay, I'm just going to trust in it.
Well, it could be, again, coming into this whole greater debate within Starfleet that's going on in this series, where if Giorgio was very much the button down Starfleet, we never fire first type.
Mm.
Lorca is the crazy man setting fire to the entire universe.
Mm.
Saru doesn't know what to do.
He's like, what do I do?
Yeah, and, right. And Burnham, I think, is going to become the blueprint for the later captains.
And he also says, I never have that opportunity, right? You would get your own captainship, and I would take your place.
Yeah.
And
now I
got to
babysit this madman who sits in the dark. He's no chairs in his office. Keeps offering me these cookies.
With a 300-year-old telescope. Thanks, Burnham. Thanks a lot.
I did like he took it, though. I mean, that's good because she's like, I ain't got no windows in prison when I go back.
Yeah.
Beautiful part of this show is watching it week by week. The bloody cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was like, it's... In a little way, it's screenwriting 101 with these like little small cliffhangers. Like I wrote down I paused at the moment they said like, but you're sure you're okay? And he says like, oh yes, I'm fine. It's like, no, he isn't. Something bad is going to happen.
I didn't see that at all.
I was expecting it like next episode, and then have to walk away and his reflection to stay.
Yeah, that was creepy. Genius. As shit.
Also, come on.
I thought his eyes were going to turn black or something.
Star Trek and mirrors, man. The only thing missing was a goatee.
Mm. So does he infect the mycelium plane with human DNA that causes the mirror universe to be born?
Or some weird kind of time dilation thing? I don't know.
It was existing in the Enterprise, so that doesn't count. Yeah.
That's right. So, or some time dilation thing?
But it was just a genius little kind of thing of how to tell you that you've broken something really, really,
really
important.
Badly, it's good.
That was creepy.
It was a great little cliffhanger. It was also nice to see the tardigrade warp out of there.
Yeah, he's like,
I'm done.
Peace out.
I'm out, guys.
We should mention, it's like the first Trek's really proper dealing with like a gay couple and not being no big deal.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. We should mention that we saw the first openly gay couple on screen. I mean, we got a little bit of it in Beyond, Star Trek Beyond, but that was in passing. I mean, this one acknowledges it, and it's matter of fact.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a nice, sweet little depiction of people brushing their teeth with really cool sonic toothbrushes.
Which you then went online and found.
It exists!
So they're not actually just like props they made, they're actually just props they bought, is it?
I think so.
Probably.
Yeah. I did like that they were black, you know, Section 31 toothbrushes.
Uh-huh. and don't forget, you know, Federation jammies.
Mm-hmm.
I want Federation jammies.
I mean, it also kind of, some of the interaction with the doctor earlier makes more sense now. It's like, don't you have somewhere to be? Isn't so nasty anymore.
Yep, yep.
It's like, oh, I do have to give someone a hand with they keep teasing the Andorians. We haven't actually seen one anywhere, have we?
Andorian tonsillitis or something, was it?
Yeah, that's right.
Andorian tonsillitis. I'm like,
I hope their tonsils are on the outside of their heads as well.
I want episode six.
I want episode six, and I want it now. I mean, this is the weird thing about the show. We watch a lot of television, and there's very little that has me craving the next episode. And in that sense, I think they were very smart to release this 1 week at a time and not go for the whole binge-watching thing.
Well, one, we'd have to wait longer, and it'd be annoying.
That's true. That's true, because it's, like you said, 4 months production time for each episode.
I would have entered a cryostasis state and someone have to pour some water on me in 6 weeks.
So I was reading an interview with the producer. And it's true, Ripper was supposed to be part of the cast. He was supposed to be Stamets' boss.
Oh.
He was supposed to have like a talking part and all this stuff as this giant tardigrade, but apparently the visual effects budget did not allow for it.
I'd say so, yeah, because again, the graininess is back again this episode.
A little bit, right? Yeah, yeah. I saw that too.
Have you found anyone talking about that? I didn't have time to research, but like someone's got a reference at some point because it's mostly close-ups. It's like they've gone. They've reused the. They've taken a standby long shot or something like that and punched it in, or they didn't get it, which is just. You've built a starship, all these uniforms. You didn't have time for a close-up.
Yeah,
and it's averaging out 3 to 4 an episode now, and it's really bugging me because everything else looks so good, and all of a sudden it's like. Oh, I'm watching film. I'm watching the motion picture like on VHS again.
This feels like it feels a lot like how we in Malaysia censor stuff now. You know, we just
with the zoom in,
the Blade Runner edit. Yeah.
I don't care. I still want
them. Have we checked how many episodes we have left before the break?
I haven't checked yet. I haven't checked.
I don't want to check.
I don't want to check because I'm afraid. I know they're only listing one episode title in advance on the Discovery page. So they're not telling you what episode 7 is called. Episode 6 is called something like Lethe, L-E-T-H-E or something. I'm not sure what that means. So they're not even... Lethe, not Lethe.
Not the beer.
No. but they're not even giving you episode titles,
right? We need a beer.
the crew go to Risa and get hammered.
But if they're not even giving you episode titles, then that's a bit mean. So I'm not sure when the break is, but
well, maybe halfway through they switch to Friends titles, the one where Lorca dies.
Please don't kill
the
Lorca.
One where the tardigrade comes back with his friends and declares war on the Federation.
You looking for us? You found us.
Yeah. Here's me and my boys. Yeah.
And then the one after that is just the one where the cadet and Burnham argue over who gets the most pillows, because you know
it's all this go anywhere.
Pillow fight.
Oh,
Star Trek Discovery, as you know, is streaming here in Malaysia on Netflix. Let us know if you're enjoying the show clearly as much as we are. I'm on at Umar Fagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
I'm at Bahiwai.
This has been Binge Watch on At The Movies, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar. Just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.